Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Just Like Normal Preschool on a Computer, Same Yet Different, and features Lisa Stinnett in an interview with Dr. Petra Kern. Hello, I'm Dr. Petra Kern, the editor-in-chief of the Imagine magazine. Welcome, Lisa Stinnett. Thank you for joining me today on this Imagine podcast. The COVID-19 global pandemic has required us to be flexible and adjust how we work with young children and their families. In this year's Imagine podcast series, we would like to explore how your work with young children and their families has directly or indirectly changed as a result of the pandemic. What have you learned and experienced, and how did your children in your classroom respond to your services? Here are my 10 questions which I have prepared for you. So question number one, Lisa, would be, where do you work and what is your role?
Okay, so thank you again for having me, Dr. Kern. I am a preschool teacher for Durham Public Schools. I work in a class of 4 and 5 year olds, and my children in my classroom are screened before they are accepted to the program. So they're considered to be, like, you know, at risk or needing services kind of more on a priority level than other kids possibly. I do have kids with special needs, and they do get their IEP services within my classroom. My classroom this year has 13 children. Usually I have about 18, but we have to keep a 5-star rating, and we are licensed, so we have, like, really high regulations and strict standards and high quality expectations. So that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. So you're working in an inclusive classroom?
Yes.
That's awesome. So my number two question for you, Lisa, is what types of services do you offer to your children and their families right now that we are still going through COVID-19?
So we have our regular early childhood expectations that we are kind of carrying out with all of our kids. I try to act like it is normal school that's happening, but just on the computer, but it is really different actually. But we do offer Zoom classes in different forms. We have a whole group of where all of our kids come together. We come together in the morning, me and my assistant, and we have 13 kids. We sing songs, we talk about the weather, we count how many friends we have at school, we have a theme, we read a book, talk about, you know, different things. Then we have small groups where we actually work together in smaller groups, like 4 children at a time. And we do more specific activities together. And then we have individual sessions. So each child, we see them for like 30 minutes on their own, sometimes more than once a week, but ideally it happens at least once a week. Sometimes that's hard to fit into parents' schedules. But so we do see whole group, small group, and individual sessions during the week. And mm-hmm. That's how we see them.
So that brings me to my next question. How have those services changed due to the global pandemic? So you're saying everything is online virtual learning. So how do you interact with those children?
So that was the scariest thing, to transition from, you know, being in person, seeing these little kids that we love so much, seeing them, their bright faces every day, to, you know, okay, guys, join us on the computer at 8:30 in the morning and we're going to do preschool. That was the weirdest transition. And I have to say, in March of 2020, when we first went into virtual learning in our district, it was very strange. It was a huge learning process. I'd never done Zoom before. I didn't need to do Zoom for school. I'd never heard of Zoom. And so now, you know, everything is conducted on the computer. Kids have just learned how to adapt. I can't explain it. Something weird has happened where they just get it. My 4-year-olds, I feel like one of the things that is unique to 4-year-olds in virtual learning is, if you think about it, they kind of got an upgrade in a way. They were at home and didn't have preschool before, most of them. You know, older students were in school in person and they left that school atmosphere and they went to remote learning. My little pre-K kids are like, wow, this lady on my computer is now talking to me. That's amazing. So I really think that they have a great attitude. They're so resilient and they have figured it out. And now we're still struggling a little bit. It's hard to figure out how to do things and make it meaningful. And that's my biggest goal. It needs to be meaningful for the children and for the families. The families go through a lot to get their kids there on time, to get their kids in on the computer, you know, interacting with us. So I try to make it as meaningful as possible.
So you're using the same curriculum online as you did before in the classroom?
Yes, we use, we have always had the freedom to kind of, we have used creative curriculum. We use an observation system or like kind of like a checkpoint system to keep up with different objectives and different learning areas for the children called Teaching Strategies Gold. And it looks at different domains like social, emotional learning, physical learning, cognitive, language, math. So we always choose a theme and we do all of our activities based on that theme. So this week we are talking about mittens and things that you wear in the cold weather. So we're reading different books, talking about that and talking about, we're reading different stories from different people's perspectives about what they wear in the winter. And we just base our learning around a theme, but use those objectives to try to reach the kids and teach them those same objectives, just using different themes that are relevant to the time of the year or the kids' interests. We send home packets every week. I go into the school and my assistant comes with me, but we go once a week. Wednesdays, the district does not have in online learning. It's called Wellness Wednesday. So they have one day where they do not have to be on the computer.
No screen
time. And so my assistant, we go in and we put together a packet. So based on the theme or the activities that we want to do for the week. And that has been very useful for us. We go in, we put together things to make some sort of craft or some sort of preschool activity that goes along with our theme. And, you know, maybe one or two of those for the week. And the parents come safely to the school. They usually come in the bus parking lot. I go out there with a mask on. I give it to them in their car. And that way we can actually try to engage in like a normal kind of preschool activities. Even though it's on the computer, we're sharing an experience.
So you're handing out materials to the families for the week?
Yes, once a week.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if the curriculum is kind of similar, and I assume then you're doing also circle time activities, and I know that you love music and singing and dancing and moving. So could you give an example what circle time would look like in a worldly setting with your 4 to 5 year old children?
Well, circle time is always really based on what the kids want to talk about. You know, somebody might come in, and I am very fly by the seat of my pants. I think that makes me a good teacher in a lot of ways. It makes a lot of people crazy that I don't write everything out that we're going to talk about. But my biggest thing is this is our time to connect. Circle time is not just about them listening to me lecture. Circle time is a time where we can, talk about what we did, what the weather's doing, how's that going to affect the rest of our day? What did you do last night, yesterday after we got out of school? So really it's making those connections. We sing good morning every day. We sing a different good morning song every day. Sometimes one of the kids choose which one we should sing. We count our friends in English and Spanish every day. We read a book. That's challenging on Zoom, because what I find is if I'm holding this book and trying to read it to them and I'm trying to see what the words are, it's very difficult. So what I have decided is that YouTube is my friend, and I mute a YouTube story. I will find a story on YouTube and I will mute it just so I can see the picture so the kids can see it. And I mute it and pause it just on the picture so that the kids can get a better view, and we could talk about like what's going on in the picture. You know, our conversations and learning how to talk to each other and socialize, that's what I'm trying to get. That's the heart of preschool. Academics are important, but socialization for 4 and 5 year olds is just so important. Mm-hmm. And that's where I struggle and worry that they're not getting enough because they're not in person with each other. And so for circle time, I'm trying to have conversations. Every Friday we have show and tell. So we talk about waiting and listening to your friends because that makes them happy, and it's good manners to stop and listen. And they clap for their friends and they ask them questions about, where did you get that? What does it do? Show me what it does. And so we're trying to make those connections. Even though it's on Zoom, we're still trying to make the connections. But we always end circle time with songs and dancing. There are a lot of good resources on YouTube that a lot of good early childhood singers that put out really cool action songs. So we mix it up a lot. It's usually the same skeleton. It's the same good morning, weather, count your friends, try to do those little preschooly things. And then it's reading a story or talking about something cool, or we play a game. Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just curious, when you're doing movement and songs, so children might probably hop and dance. And so how do you arrange it virtually so that you actually can see them and they're not jumping out of your view?
It's very difficult, Dr. Kern. It is very difficult.
Do we have a pillow for them to sit in front of the computer for you so that you have a defined space for them? Or do you have a square marked for them? Or are the parents actually reinforcing where they should be so that they're not walking out of your view?
It's very organic the way it happened. But now that you're mentioning that, that might be a nice step for us to move this last semester of the school year, because we have just found out we're going to be virtual for the rest of the school year. So I'm thinking that we've been talking today, I've been thinking in my head about how I might need to refine these last few months and try to make things a little bit more deliberate and a little bit more structured. There is structure in preschool. It looks different to a lot of people, but right now, when we do movement activities, I just tell them to find a space to stand up. And, you know, some of our kids do get physical therapy. And so I know that, and their parents are right beside them. And so I know they have restrictions. So I try not to make it too one size fits all for everyone. But usually it's, usually they stay right there in front of the computer. And, you know, they might go out of frame for a minute if it's a very active song, and I might not see them for a minute, but it's so busy. I'm so excited when they're very participatory. They like to do those action songs, especially at the end of after we've read a story and talked for like 30 minutes. It's like, okay, let's dance. We need to remember that this is as much screen time as they've ever had. Probably, well, I don't know about these days. There, a lot of kids are getting more screen time, but it's definitely more screen time that I'm asking them to have than I would be normally comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So
you talked about the social interactions, that those are very important to you, and that you encourage this through the talking on show and tell and so forth. What about sensory goals? How do you accomplish them virtually?
That is one of the hardest things to accomplish. Sensory goals are so, you know, I don't have anybody this year that's very worried about loud sounds. So that's been very good, because Zoom tends to get loud sometimes. Although we do play a fun game of unmute, or okay, let's put yourself on mute. I have these little flashcards ready for me so that we can work on that. And so if things get loud, we have to practice with those mute things. We do, in one of our packets, like a couple weeks ago, we sent home Play-Doh with the kids, a little container of Play-Doh. And so I will angle my camera down onto my table, and we roll out letters, or we practice rolling together. And and we work on fine motor things with scissors. And, you know, that is very hard though, because parents, you're in their house. I mean, they are in their house. I am teaching their child who's in their house. And a lot of the parents are like, I don't really want Play-Doh in my house. I don't really like that. I don't want a mess. I've thought about sending, I've seen online people make little sensory boxes out of just a little plastic container and send home some materials. So I'm planning on doing that and crossing my fingers and hope that it goes well. But sensory items are very hard. I have parents who are very weird about their children even using scissors, and I'm trying to teach them how to use those for school, and they don't want them to use it. And that's their house. They can use them when they come to my classroom, but I can't force them at their own home.
Yeah, so lots of adjustments. And what other adjustments did families had to make at their home for the service provision or for your teaching?
So in our district, all kindergarten through 12th grade students received Chromebooks to access school. But the preschool program is funded differently, and not all of our preschool students received electronic devices in order to even access school. Our preschool department did prioritize children with special needs and kids who were receiving special services and had an IEP. And so the children in my classroom who do have an IEP do have a Chromebook that was given by the district. But the other families, that's a big adjustment they've had to make. They've had to either purchase a tablet or an iPad or a computer, which is a big expense. I had one family who the student, English was not their first language, and the mom did not have a smartphone and the family did not have internet. And so I was very torn. How am I going to reach this student? How am I going to make this meaningful for them? So, I mean, we set up a system where I would make them an extra large packet and the therapist would put activities in there and I would drop it. They didn't have a car either. That was another thing. So I would drop it off at their apartment on the doorstep under their mat. I would text mom, because mom could text but did not have like a smartphone or a way to do like video conferencing. So I would text her that his packet was there. And then the next week when I would pick it up, she would put his completed projects in the packet and hand that to me. Mm-hmm. And I would take that with me. So we have had to get very creative on how we can reach every kid, because it's so important. Like, this is their preschool year. I need to make it important. Another adjustment has been childcare. These parents are working families and they need to work. So they either have to have themselves be home or they have to have a childcare provider there with them, because our kids cannot easily turn on a computer and log in. They don't know how to spell their passwords and things. So that's a big adjustment. Just accessing us. I mean, gosh, it's easy once we get here in Zoom, we can do fun things together. But I mean, getting there is the hardest thing for a lot of families. So we did have a family who got internet. Our district is really trying to help with preschool as much as they can, because they know that preschool wasn't included in that. So we have had some situations where children are given a hotspot to get on online. But that's a big adjustment.
Would you say that that's the biggest challenge you encountered with your families and the children, or what were other challenges you saw?
Well, besides not being able to work on socialization, that's probably the biggest challenge. But another challenge, I love the families. I have had the best families and the most involved families. They've been very wonderful. But number one, children usually do different things for their teacher and for their parent. Sometimes they cooperate more. A lot of times in the past, we've had students who might not do something for their family at home, but they might do it for their teachers at school. Because, you know, children just do that sometimes. But one of the things I've noticed is that the parents are doing too much for their children. And so I'm trying to get them to cut. And the parent is cutting and handing the child the pieces. And I'll say, because it's hard for me to be very direct, I'll say, and I don't want to offend the parents. They're helping us out so much. So I say, oh, so-and-so, let me see you do it. Can you show me how you're cutting with the scissors? And I have to really, you know, let the parents know it doesn't have to be perfect. This is about the process, not the product. I don't care if their turkey looks silly. Like, that's preschool work to me. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to be perfect. I want them to learn how to cut or mm-hmm. to learn how to write a letter. I don't want you to do it for them. That's been a big challenge because they want their kids to be successful and they, you know, they're not, they are their own child's expert, of course, but their passion and their job is usually not the early childhood field. So we know that the kids doing it themselves is very important. Mm-hmm. I know that that experience is important.
Yeah, so there are great moments for parental education.
And I did think about that as one of the positive things that's come out of it is I feel like that parents are getting to see an inside look on what works sometimes with the kids and what we're trying to get them to learn and how we're getting them to learn. And they also see the process of how we get to a certain point. Like I think that we might send a piece of work home that the child did, you know, a few years ago, we might've sent this home and said, oh, look, this is their work they did today. And then put it in their backpack and it gets crumbled up and nobody notices it. But when that parent is sitting there and watches how we did this and how hard it was for that child to snip every single piece of this paper and this and to make this leaf collage, and they know that they took that yellow strip and cut all those 10 pieces up, and they know they took that red strip and cut it all up, and then they know how hard it was to get the glue stick top off and to make this look like this. If you see this just out of the, you know, if you just see it out of the book bag, you're like, oh, that's beautiful, and you put it down. But once you see the work that goes behind it, I think they've gained a new appreciation for what their child is learning mm-hmm. while they're
and doing. Also learning about the developmental stages of it.
Yes. And mm-hmm. learning that even asking for help and even following directions, those are things they're learning. There's so much that goes into making a craft with your teachers. It just doesn't matter if it looks like what it's supposed to look like. It's just the process. That's my biggest soapbox. It's just mm-hmm. preschool is learning and experimenting and engaging and hands-on. And that's the hardest part. It's like when you call AT&T because your modem is messing up and you're like, my internet's not working, and they tell you all these things to do and you're not there. They're not there in the room with you to help you and show you. It's what I feel like I'm doing with my children. Like, okay, hold your scissors this way. No, like put your thumb in the little hole and put your, okay, now hold them this way. I feel like it's very hard to retrain yourself how to teach someone who's not right in front of you. So that's been
because you have to be very precise in your description, in yes. your instructions, in yes. your wording, how to do it. Yeah. Right. Did you also see any benefits for the children in doing remote learning?
I do think that our children are picking up the academic things quicker because it's really focused on more during this time because we're not working as much on like the socialization stuff as much. So, you know, maybe those academic skills are being picked up a little quicker. Also, I feel like we get a good glimpse into their family lives. We see their family dynamics. We form really good relationships with their parents, even more so than usual. And I think that's the most important thing is having relationships with families. You know, we don't spend as much time on behavior issues that we might have to do. Redirecting different behaviors in the preschool classroom is part of the job. So you might be sitting working with someone using scissors in the classroom, and someone, there might be an issue over here that we have to stop for a minute and work on. So we aren't dealing with redirection and behaviors like we might be. I mean, that's one way to try to look at it in a positive way, is that we don't have to do that.
Right. So how do you see telepractice changing the future of service provision or teaching, and even after the pandemic?
So I did work this past summer during the pandemic with our preschool assessment team that the preschool assessment team is the office for Durham Public Schools where someone might call for a referral for their child if they have concerns. And then the child is screened and scheduled like for evaluations and, you know, with the occupational therapist and the speech therapist and everyone. and a teacher and a psychologist. And working behind the scenes on those referral meetings and pre-evaluation meetings this summer on Zoom and trying to figure out how we are going to do an assessment of a child and what that child will need, how to do that on Zoom was very interesting at first and very confusing. But I realized that for some families who have transportation issues and might have not as flexible schedules for work, you know, if that's been keeping parents from being able to come in and do an evaluation for their child or give them therapy because they might not have transportation, I feel like telehealth will be able, you know, you'll be able to do teletherapy for a family who might not have normally been able to fit an appointment in. I just try to look at the positives. I think that physical therapy is kind of hard to do. I've noticed the physical therapist that works with my class, she comes in our circle times and we do specific activities that aim towards the physical therapy goals of that child, and the parents are helping them. That might be the one that's a little bit harder. For speech therapy and occupational therapy, I think that we have found a nice little way to make it work. I don't think it's as ideal when you're working with like school tools, but it can be done. I mean, I think that scheduling meetings with families and conferences on Zoom would be something that would make it more convenient for families with working schedules. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's ways that we can make it happen, make things easier, routines that we've normally done. I don't think it's ideal to continue forever having preschool this way, but I also think if a child was sick and if I had a Zoom camera set up in my circle time, that child could sit at their couch at their house, even though they're sick, they could participate that way. I feel like there's a way to still incorporate it for kids who might normally have missed a day of school or a parent who might have missed a meeting.
That makes sense. So what is your hope for the future of early childhood education?
I cannot wait to be back in a classroom with children. And I have been teaching for over 20 years. And so there was a time when I thought I was maybe getting a little burnout or tired of, you know, I go through these periods where I'm like, oh, maybe I'm just feeling like, maybe I'm getting tired or burnt out from teaching. And then this has rejuvenated me and made me feel like I can't wait to get back in the classroom and do these things that I took for granted. My other big soapbox is that I really wish that people would continue to learn more about and value early childhood education. So I think sometimes there are people who are still not sure how important early learning is and early intervention, and oh, you're just playing with the kids or you guys are just having fun and babysitting. Basically, I'm fortunate to have a principal who has an early childhood background, and she is so supportive, and she sees the work that we're doing with the kids as important and is valuable. I just want every early childhood educator to really feel like what they're doing is important. Even if this time is very frustrating for you, because it is a frustrating time. I mean, the other preschool teacher at my school, we pump each other up all the time. Like, this has been a really hard week. I feel like I didn't reach the kids like I wanted to. And she'll just pop me right back in to shape and say, no, think about this, this, and this. They've been doing great. And I do the same for her. So we all just have to be patient and hope that there's going to be a normal day around the corner.
So just to wrap this up, are there any resources you have found helpful during this time, what you can use in your classroom?
I do like, well, of course, Zoom. I mean, that's so important. Like I said, it's amazing what you can find on YouTube and the educators that are out there putting out good content and reading books. Those are amazing. And so I find a lot of value in that. The Boom learning cards are interactive, like learning cards that you can use. I love those. I do like Teachers Pay Teachers because that's just a website that you can go and buy some printouts and some things that we can put in our packets. But really, like, I just, I give my cell phone number to all my parents. And I think that's not super common, but I like for parents to be able to have access to me as much as they can during this time. So, you know, I tell parents, like, it's, there's a chance of snow today here in Durham, North Carolina. So I told the parents and the kids, if they saw snow, to take a picture of it and send it to me, and then I could share it with all the class. So, you know, I just feel like that's an easy, simple thing to do. Then it's an easy resource.
So my last question for you, can you give us some words of encouragement for our listeners, to all the educators and music therapists out there who are going through COVID-19 with preschool children wanting to make it special for them?
You know, I just think when you look in the eyes of those kids who look up to you, and they're looking at you like, what's she going to do next? What is she going to say? Or he, what is he going to do now? I'm just hanging on the edge of my seat. I look at the sparkle in their eyes, and they don't realize that this is an inconvenience or a bad thing. They look at it as, wow, this is amazing. This lady is talking to me on my computer. You know, sure, the children have watched YouTube and seen lots of things online before, but this is frustrating for us because we know different. This is so wonderful and new. This is their preschool to them. I just think about really remembering the value in what we're doing. It's easy to get frustrated and to think about the hardships we are all going through, and the changes we've made, and the relearning of our jobs. All of our professions are completely different right now than they used to be. But just trying to think of those little tiny glimpses of amazement that the kids give us all the time. And that's why we do what we do in the classroom and in online. You just still have to look for the positive. And that is the way I get through, because it's not easy every day.
Thank you for sharing your insights, Lisa. I sure would like to be a little child in your online classroom.
You're so sweet.
Thanks for listening to this Imagine podcast, produced in 2021.